My name is Karan. I'm a program manager at the Azure Compute team, and we're part of the Azure Big Compute team, in fact, in the HPC team. And we're responsible for some of the platform services and some of the accelerated infrastructure. So today we're going to talk about, obviously, GPUs. We're also going to talk about the AI service, which is going to be covered by Alex, who's my colleague in the team. So what I wanted to do was, you know, there's always sort of these, you know, vision slides and things like that, but it really is really important for us from our team's perspective because, you know, although we are part of compute, we think about things a little bit differently. Because we are responsible for the accelerated hardware, we do want to think about things such as, you know, no compromise infrastructure. That's really important for some of our customers that are running really high-end HPC applications, you know, or even things like deep learning, machine learning workloads. We are investing in scale up and scale out, certainly with scale out with some of our networking infrastructure that we'll talk about. And we want to get to the near bare metal performance as possible because most of our customers are running bare metal on-prem, and when they look to switch to Azure, they're always sort of comparing these benchmarks and workloads. And so we want to make sure that we get close to that possible as much as possible, and the delta is really, really small. And then we're investing in our ecosystem of partners. So we've got really strong relationships with NVIDIA. We've got really strong relationships with Mellanox and a bunch of other partners that I'll talk about. And we're really leveraging those to make sure that we give the best infrastructure there. And then additionally, you know, we want to enable the true HPC in the cloud. Yes, today, you know, most people sort of go through a transition of different types of you know, workloads where they're on premise and then they go pure IaaS or then they go hybrid. We want to truly enable the full HPC infrastructure in the cloud where you're creating your assets or your data sets in the cloud, you're processing them in the cloud, and then you're visualizing them in the cloud as well. So let's do a quick recap of what Azure's got today. And you know, I'll kind of run by this stuff pretty quickly because you've probably sort of seen this stuff before. So to start off with, you know, we've got two separate offerings. The first one being is the NV-based instances. You've probably heard about these before. These are the virtual machines that enable Quadro-based workloads, VDI, or workstation in the cloud. They're powered by NVIDIA's Tesla M60 card. And so this card is a dual GPU design. So what that means is a single physical board, and it's got two GPUs on it. So when I say that we've got one M60 up to all the way to four M60s, it means half a card, single card, two full cards in a single VM. Additionally, those cores, just FYI, are physical cores. They're not hyper-threaded cores. Again, a very important distinction from some other competitors. And then we also enable Quadro licensing. I'll talk about that a little bit later, but essentially what we're trying to do is the main purpose of having that VM in the cloud was, you know, lots of people do simulations or rendering or different types of workloads in the cloud, and they were having to move this ginormous amount of data on-prem, and it sort of defeated the purpose of having the data produced in the cloud because they had to keep moving it back and forth. So we wanted to enable a VM where they could essentially spin it up, look at their data, visualize it, and then iterate on it. And so we obviously introduced the NV sizes. Now, what's happened is, as a side effect, is that people now realize, hey, if I'm visualizing my outputs in the cloud, I can certainly create my inputs in the cloud. So people are now actually using these VMs for VDI infrastructure. They're using it for things like, you know, creating digital assets for movie scenes or things like that, or even creating data sets in other scenarios like oil and gas. So we wanted to enable sort of, you know, everything in the cloud so that people are able to do, or engineers or designers, artists, and you know, data scientists can do everything directly in the cloud. There's no on-prem infrastructure at all. Obviously, that's not true today, but that's kind of where we're headed with this. Graphics are required for more workloads. So some of the latest, Internet Explorer, Chrome, all of those things are actually graphics accelerated these days. A lot of different types of applications, such as Autodesk products, Adobe products, CATIA, most of the automotive manufacturers are actually using very highly intensive, graphics-intensive applications in the cloud. And you can certainly use those on the M60. And so the layering, the way the layering actually works is obviously we've got the Azure IaaS layer in the bottom, and then we attach the GPUs on it, and then what we've got is a Quadro driver. Now, Now, the cool thing here is that traditionally today, you have to go to a third party, obviously NVIDIA in this case, to go and buy the driver from them and pay them based on a certain metric. What we enable inside Azure is essentially seamless. So what that means is there's no license service to set up. There's none of that complexity at all. You just launch the VM, you install the driver, and then you're good to go. The licensing cost is actually incorporated into the compute cost of the VM, which is pretty awesome. So again, as I mentioned, you can run Siemens NX, you can run 3DS Excite, you can run all these really graphical intensive workloads directly in Azure. And so I wanted to talk about partner solutions because obviously you can use things like RDP directly into these VMs, but most of the folks are using sort of partner solutions. And so we announced with Teradici actually at last build that Teradici would be supported on top of Azure. So there you're able to use their cloud access software directly onto Azure. You can even launch it as an extension, as a VM extension directly onto the VM in a single script. So you launch a VM, it installs the driver, installs the extension, and you have essentially a Teradici infrastructure in the cloud. We also support Citrix. So ZenApp and Zen Desktop support was announced by Citrix on N-Series, specifically NV-based instances, last Ignite in September. So you can run traditional Citrix-based infrastructure directly on top of that. And then recently, if anybody checked into GPU Technology Conference earlier this week, we also had Frame on stage showing their browser-based workstation offering directly on these NV series. And so what it is you can access all of those applications that I talked about directly from a browser or even an app from one of your devices, which is really, really cool because you could sort of take it on the go. And then on the back end, you can even connect your applications up to an Azure, HPC cluster or a compute cluster. So you've essentially got, a supercomputer in your pocket, so to speak. The second set of offerings that we announced at the same time as NV was NC. These are VMs that expose CUDA and OpenCL-based workloads on top of them. Again, it's exactly the same as the NV series, meaning that you get similar configuration. However, it's backed by a NVIDIA Tesla K80 GPU. Again, a dual GPU device. So when I say one K80, it actually means half a card. Additionally, you can see at the far end of the table, we've got an additional size, which is exactly the same. The only difference here is that the networking. So we have a second backend network, which is enabled by Mellanox's InfiniBand networking infrastructure. And this is really primarily for workloads that take up multiple sets of VMs, and you really need low latency and high bandwidth. And so we're seeing about less than 2 microseconds of latency between a server to a server. So think about all of the deep learning, the machine learning stuff you've heard at Build over the last couple of days. You can certainly now expand on those jobs and utilize these VMs for not only multi-GPU in a single node, but multiple GPUs across multiple nodes. So you can start stringing together hundreds of GPUs for a single job that are all working in parallel together. So that's pretty exciting, and Azure is the only cloud provider today to provide InfiniBand infrastructure as part of our VMs. So that's really cool. So state of the union. So I wanted to sort of cover what's happened since we released these VMs. We've had thousands and thousands of customers come in and use these things during preview, which was last year. And then we GA'd, meaning general availability, public general availability since December 1st. Now, we've had such a massive demand that we've had a constraint of capacity, and we're working through that as quickly as possible. So in the next slide, you'll see how in the future we're going to be deploying additional clusters in the coming months. These GPU offerings are sort of a base layer of innovation moving forward for any future offerings as well. So this is a collaboration between Windows Server, our Hyper-V team, which is Hyper-V, our Linux guys in Azure, and then us as well. So it really is at the forefront of innovation as well. And most of our our internal products are running on these GPUs as well. So if you're using these VMs, most likely is our internal teams are using these VMs as well for similar type of services. So one particular one I want to point out was Chris.ai, which is a new speech translation service that's part of the cognitive toolkit, cognitive services ecosystem. And that's completely built on top of our Azure N series. They're actually doing the training directly on top of the K80s. Since the general availability, we've got hundreds and hundreds of customers that are in production live, that are running production mission-critical workloads. And then AI and deep learning is really driving a lot of growth. Obviously, the sort of the theme of, you know, a lot of keynotes on Wednesday was AI and deep learning, and that really seems to be driving a lot of our demand and workload iteration. So you know, these are a couple of the you know, different regions that we're going to be deploying these servers into. Obviously, you know, the deployments will vary between, you know, NV and NC based on where you are. They're obviously separate offerings, so we're going to be, you know, expanding those to different regions. And again, you know, the pain on sort of getting more and more is going to get alleviated by the end of the year when we have lots more data centers supported with these GPUs. So talk a little bit about under the covers, you know, what happens under the covers, because this is quite important on how we expose these GPUs. So under the covers, we have, you know, at the bottom layer, we've got the hardware, obviously. We've got our clusters in our data centers that we deploy with racks and racks of different servers. And those servers then contain either the M60 GPU or the K80 GPU, similar to some of the other, you know, other providers. And then on top of that, we have our host OS. Now, today, most of our host OSs are running Server 2012. In the case of GPUs, we're running Server 2016 as part of our host OS layer. Now, as part of that host OS layer and as part of our hypervisor, which is Hyper-V, it exposes a thing called DDA, which I'll talk about in the next slide. And then from DDA, we are allowed to expose our GPUs directly to the guest. So the guest can be obviously Linux, Windows, and then you can run it on, you know, obviously M60 or K80. And then you can bring your own images, you can build services on top of it. You can even deploy Azure Marketplace images as well. So DDA is discrete device assignment. So essentially what it allows us to do is take a couple of PowerShell scripts and then allow us to take a PCIe device, directly assign it to a guest. So it's essentially a PCI pass-through. What it allows us to do is, because we're attaching a physical device to a VM, it allows us to run the native driver on the VM itself for the device. And what that means is we get really, really good performance because you're essentially getting a physical device hooked onto a VM. Now, the cool thing is the DDA is actually available as part of Server 2016 release in general. So what that means is you can actually run your stack on-prem using Server 2016, the same technology that we've got in Azure as well. So you can, you know, bring up a server, run 2016 on it, put some PCIe devices or GPUs on it, and then use these commands to essentially expose your device directly onto a VM, which is pretty cool. What that means is, you know, this is just a little screenshot of a device manager that is showing you the devices that are directly attached. Obviously, based on the VM that you'll pick, you'll be able to get 1, 2, or 4 GPUs, you know, attached to those devices. And so this is really cool because, you know, you're essentially getting the full power of a device. It's not virtualized, so you can really take advantage of the power of the GPU. Some real-world case studies. We've actually published some of these online, so I really recommend that you go check these out. The first one I want to talk about is City of Hope. This is one of the top cancer research institutes in America. And what they're doing is they're doing a lot of different types of protein and DNA analysis on top of Azure K80 GPUs, which is very compute intensive. Now, the really important part here is, I mean, if you look at the bottom thing that they're saying here, we're not shouldering ideas, just computers. It's pretty powerful. They're using this stuff to solve, you know, research on cancer. And additionally, they actually also even do things like deep learning, where they're taking effects of drugs on patients and then taking the history of that and then trying to predict how a patient would react to a future iteration of that drug. So again, this is published online, so I'd go check it out. It actually describes how they use the K80s in specific, so it's a pretty interesting thing to look at. Audio Burst is another one. They're essentially using both M60s and K80s. They're using the M60s from a transcoding and also streaming point of view. So they're actually using the visualization VMs to stream their content directly to the device. And then they're using the K80s for things like deep learning, where they're essentially turning all of the video content into closed captions and then having the customers go in and say, they can say, hey, where is, you can sort of obviously put in whatever topic that you like, and it'll actually go in, look at the database, and then go give you all the results directly into the video. Jellyfish Pictures is a pretty fun one. This is a visual effects studio based in London, and they're an Emmy and BAFTA award-winning studio. They actually worked on the latest Star Wars movies as well. And what they're doing is they're using the M60s for their distributed artists. So they have artists all over the world that have to go and buy, a $10,000 rig. They don't have to do that anymore. They actually use Teradici directly to log into the VM in Azure and create their digital assets directly in Azure. And then once they're done, they actually use the K80s to do rendering. So they're using things like Redshift and Octane to do the ray traced rendering for their digital assets. So all of that is happening in the cloud. Oceaneering is another one. They use M60s and K80s as well. This is a subsea surface engineering company that builds these little submarines underneath the covers, and then that actually goes in and does things like repairs and maintenance for the oil rigs. So, a lot of folks have been asking for more and more and more power. And obviously, with NVIDIA's release of Pascal last year, we wanted to make sure that we allow for that increase in performance. And so earlier this week, we announced NCV2, so the second generation of the compute stack, which is going to be powered by Pascal P100. And additionally, you're going to be able to get 1, 2, or 4 GPUs in a single node. And additionally, keeping with our sort of tradition of scale out, we're also going to be offering the InfiniBand infrastructure as a second backend network as well. So you're going to be able to string together multiple GPUs across multiple nodes to be able to do MPI-based jobs or AI-based deep learning jobs, training jobs as well. We've doubled the memory from last generation. We've also doubled the disk size as well. Now, since the last generation, we didn't have premium storage on the last generation. This generation, in the NCV2, we will have premium storage as standard for all of these VMs, so you can get high IOPS there as well. So, we've been doing some testing on these P100s internally, and we've been seeing some incredible performance, in relative to some of the CPU and GPU-based previous infrastructure. We're seeing almost 40x on some workloads, which is pretty incredible. Now, P100 offers both double precision, single precision, and half precision workloads, which is going to be pretty awesome. Now, the double precision workloads are much more relevant to the HPC, maybe right after? Yep. So the double precision workloads are very relevant to the traditional HPC apps, things like reservoir simulation and others as well. So that's going to be really, really important here from a P100 standpoint. These are going to be later in the summer. There is actually a link at the end of the deck that you'll be able to go sign up for the preview. We look forward to seeing people utilize the new generation of P100s. And they will live side by side with, obviously, the K80s as well. So we're going to switch tact a little bit. We're going to talk about AI a little bit. And I'm going to invite Alex, my colleague on stage, to talk a little bit about AI and what we're doing in that space.
Thank you, Karan. Hello, morning. My name is Alex Sutton. I'm a program manager on the Azure HPC team. I focus on our future HPC infrastructure and solution strategy, in particular now what we're doing around AI and deep learning. I've been at Microsoft just over 20 years now, and I've really come to appreciate over the last year how AI and deep learning really is fundamentally changing software, both how we're developing software and understanding data, what users are doing, how we're analyzing code, how we're operating services, as well as the type of applications that we're building for users that take advantage of vision, of speech, of text. And at the core, AI is really doing either a prediction or classification, and it's enabling these fundamentally new rich apps, new user experiences. It really is changing and impacting every single product at Microsoft, and I'm really excited how we can take this infrastructure and tools that we're using internally and start to make it available for you and incorporate into your apps. When I think about kind of AI, here's how I've been thinking about it from the infrastructure side. At the top are applications you want to build, could be answering questions, relevance in terms of you think about about Bing or search, image classification, whether it's for autonomous driving, identifying medical issues in x-rays or other radiology, thinking about speech, understanding what a user is going to do before it happens so you can provide a better answer and a better experience. Underneath that are a set of common algorithms or patterns, sequence to sequence, and text analysis, for example. These are then implemented using various tools or what are called AI frameworks. CNTK from Microsoft, TensorFlow, Chainer, whole variety of tools that implement, in the case of deep learning, these neural networks that start to mimic how people make sense of the world and understand things. If you think about a photograph, how I can start with pixels, start understanding shadows, patterns, lines, build it up into a face or an object, recognize that, and then make a decision. Underlying this is a lot of computing power, both to build these models, build the understanding, powered by CPUs, powered by GPUs, in the case of Bing, powered by FPGAs. In order to make good AI, you need a lot of data. You need to understand the world, train it for the problems that you have, and then it's a continuous loop. I'm using training or data to train my models, test it, or deploy it out in the world, and then operating on real data as it's coming in and continuously improving my models. GPU is becoming increasingly important. These are some of the major AI frameworks being used. All support GPUs now. People have made that transition from CPU to a GPU. Now people are going from how do I operate on one GPU to how do I operate on two, on four, on eight GPUs in a machine. It's not quite as easy as I'm going to run on one, now I'm going to run on four. You have to rethink how your network works, how you're doing layers, how you're taking advantage of that scale. The next stage is how do I run even larger models with even more data on multiple machines. Many of our teams at Microsoft are starting to work on their training and development on tens of GPUs, on hundreds of GPUs. We did a paper last fall running on a cluster of over 1,000 GPUs at a supercomputing center in Europe. This is where our investments in InfiniBand and the RDMA network come into play, and why we think about HPC or deep learning as an HPC problem. I've been working on our HPC team at Microsoft the past 10 years, and we really do fit into this world and bring a lot of experience in how I'm handling large networks, large-scale systems management, handling data. You know, there's a core infrastructure problem down below that if you don't solve, the data scientists, the experimentation, the innovation's not going to happen. There's kind of two real phases where this takes place. First, on the training and testing, as you develop your models, things that can take, you know, days, weeks, years on a CPU can be dramatically accelerated with a GPUs. You know, first, again, we're working on one, scaling up to multiple GPUs. We have teams at Microsoft, like the speech models, can take weeks and weeks to run. As we move to the latest NVIDIA GPUs, cutting that down in half makes a real impact for those teams as they can experiment and build richer and richer models. On the other side, once I have a model, I do what's called evaluation or inference or scoring. Here's where you start to think a little bit more about price price and performance and what's going to make sense for your application. Can I run on a CPU? Am I going to scale? Can I take advantage of a GPU? Is it going to help me with a performance? If you think about Bing, be able to respond instantly within a milliseconds to a customer query is really important. If I'm running my AI in a car and trying to do autonomous driving, evaluating those images coming in really, really quickly is absolutely critical. If I think about kind of what our secret sauce is and within Microsoft and how we deliver the cognitive services and the customized cognitive services and Bing and the stuff like if you saw the PowerPoint our real-time translation is lots of experimentations. There's no easy answer to building AI. It takes a lot of experiments in networking and framework and in building your networks, the parameters that you're using. It takes lots of GPUs and lots of data. What we're really trying to do on the Azure side is build a very rich, robust platform to help you build a custom AI. And it's hard. The infrastructure gets in your way. This is where I think about training and testing as kind of an HPC problem at the core. If I'm going to be working with tens or hundreds of GPUs, how do I deploy that cluster? How do I get those VMs deployed? The software that I need installed. Getting the CUDA drivers, the DNN frameworks, any Python dependencies. If I'm doing lots of experimentations, I've got a job scheduling problem. How do I queue the work? How do I run the most important jobs first? Hardware fails. How do I handle failures and restart a job on another machine so the data scientist or researcher can stay productive? I also need to protect my data and my code as I'm running it. What we're hearing from a number of customers now is they want to access that rich data that they have about their users. Sometimes there's personal information there that the data scientists or researchers can't see. So how can you go and train a model on real data that the data scientist isn't allowed to go and actually look at or isn't allowed to go to and log in on the machine to a debug? So how can you provide kind of a black box experience so the data scientist can experiment but still keep the proprietary data secure? And once I've done lots of experiments, shut things down so I don't leave a cluster idle over the weekend and spend too much money. So what I'm excited to announce today is a new service called Azure Batch AI Training. This is one of these names that is kind of highly descriptive or boring because it describes exactly what we do, which is make it easy to do AI training and testing at scale. Think of it as a managed service that allows data scientists, researchers, any developer that's building or customizing AI to easily train and test and do that at scale. At the core, it's giving you a cluster of GPUs so you can do more in parallel, run with larger and larger data sets, and work with the type of infrastructure that all the teams at Microsoft are using now. What's exciting to me is starting to bring the infrastructure and tools that we are using every day to develop our AI, our services, and make it accessible to you. The service is built on Azure Batch. We've had this service in production for about four years or so. It's really a PaaS service that provides HPC clusters as a service, goes and deploys a cluster on a demand with the types of VMs that you want, then and goes and schedules the work. Think at a very the program model at a very simple level is what executable or script do you want to run, what command line parameters do you want are passed to it at runtime, where do you want to run it, on what type of VM, and how much to run in parallel. There's no additional charge for using Batch or the AI training service. You're simply paying for the underlying compute that you use. One of the reasons that we're doing this is to provide a richer experience that's really specialized for people that are doing AI training and testing. Batch has a lot of power, but it's really targeted at people developing, or at people developing services. So what we thought about is, if we were to go and develop a service using Batch, what would it look like? How do we empower data scientists work with a variety of tools, and what do you need? And at the core, it's ability to define a cluster, run a job, access logs, and export those models. We focus on doing things around Docker, as you're seeing through like NVIDIA's announcements this week. The deep learning frameworks and dependencies are being packaged as Docker containers, being maintained by the community, so it's very easy to develop with. Build a model on your laptop, and then deploy it in a training environment like Azure. Make it very easy to use large numbers of GPUs. If you're doing multi-GPU training, install the InfiniBand drivers, make MPI work for the GPU-to-GPU communication. We've got a very rich SDK focused on Python first, which is how most of the deep learning models are being developed, and most of the community is comfortable writing Python scripts. We've also got, like most Azure services, a REST API, as well as an SDK for C# and Java, which is really focused on automation and integration with tools. And this is important. We're just part of the workflow. We're very good at running jobs at scale. We're not focusing on the end-to-end experiment management. We're not data scientist experts on how I go and build the models, how I build the network, how I iterate. We're working very closely with the data science team at Microsoft, Azure Machine Learning, that is focusing on how do I go and develop these deep learning models, how do I tie into an end-to-end workflow for experimentation and delivery into my apps, as well as working with a number of external partners and tools, and solving kind of this underlying infrastructure challenge. Let me go and show you a quick demo of just submitting a job through a script, and I'll walk you through what the API is doing under the covers. So what you see here is a Jupyter notebook. It's a great way of sharing Python code, Python scripts. We're developing all of our tutorials now as Jupyter notebooks that you can then run locally or run in the Azure notebook service. I'm just going to walk you through what a script would look like submitting a job with our service. The API is still being developed, still being iterated, so some of this is going to change. First step is just importing our library, then configuring the client, what Azure subscription am I using. In this case, I'm actually not running in ARM yet. I'm using a local API server that we have deployed for a demo and custom credentials. Next is choosing the framework and container that you want to use. In this case, we're going to use a CNTK container. One of the things that we do is we can mount storage endpoints into the container. In this case, we're going to use a gluster file server that we set up for scalable training data, mount that into the container so my code can directly access that, as well as using then Azure files for the output logs for the training. Next is setting up the details of the model that I want to run. Here I've got my model defined in a Python script. And I'm going to pass in two parameters, where the input data is and where the output data should live. And then we're starting to do further schematization or specialization for each of the frameworks. So I'm running CNTK, if I'm running TensorFlow, how can you describe the specific, what does it mean to auto-run with that tool? In this case, for CNTK, configuring the runtime that I'm operating with a Python script as opposed to a brain script. Go and run that. And then finally, accessing all of those parameters and submitting the job. And we see in a moment, it called into the API, submitted the job. Here we're just going to go and run a loop to check if the job is running. This job takes about 20 minutes or so to run. Typically, what you would do now is tail the logs, pipe the output logs to a tool like TensorBoard for a monitoring. We make it very easy to expose those logs out from the GPUs or from the training machines, either tunneling through if you want to connect over SSH and look at the logs, or exposing it out to tools like TensorBoard. And then when you're done, go and look at the output logs and models from the job. Let me switch back and just give you a little bit more detail about what these jobs look like. So this was just, what I showed here was really just the part of adding a job. There's a broader API for configuring the cluster, reading the logs, and handling models. The first step is to describe the resources that you want to run on. You can define a cluster up front that's then used across multiple jobs or multiple users, or if you just want to submit a single job, the resources are required, or the cluster can also be described on a job. So I'm doing experimentation. I may define a cluster because I'm going to run tens or hundreds of jobs. If I've got a job that's going to run for days or weeks, I can just submit it and go. You don't have to create any other special account. We take care of batch and storage accounts under the covers. Simply tell us what region you want to run in, the number, the type of VM that you want to use, an NC6, an NC24R, for example, and then the target number of VMs that you want to start with. Because the service builds in batch, we can use both standard VMs as well as the low priority VMs that were announced this week. The low priority VMs are kind of the equivalent of spot pricing. When we have excess capacity of GPUs, which happens every once in a while, we want to make it very easy for you to run at scale at a lower cost. We support auto-scaling the size of the cluster. As you could say, set a range from 0 to 100 GPUs. When there's no work in the queue, we will scale things down. When jobs are submitted, we will start to scale up to the maximum that you specified. And then the last three things are describing the compute environment that you want to run on. The virtual machine configuration is the underlying guest OS, Windows, Linux. You could use Ubuntu. The data science VM from Microsoft includes a bunch of the frameworks built in, as well as you can bring your own custom VM with your software installed. The shared volume section is where we can mount a remote file system onto the VM. We're working on support for an NFS server, parallel file system like Gluster, as well as Azure files. The user accounts section is where you specify how does someone log into one of those machines if necessary. Configuration for both Windows and Linux, setting up the admin users, setting passwords, setting up SSH keys as an example. And then the node is what actually goes and is run on the, or is the further a configuration of the machines that you're running training on. If you're using a containers, what's the source of the container? Is it coming from Docker Hub, an Azure Container Registry, or your own source? And then what storage points do you want mounted directly into that container, again, to access the training data or for your output output logs. If a VM image or a container doesn't satisfy you, we also have the ability to run a custom setup script or startup script where you can install your own software, Python libraries, configure the machines however you want. Then simple standard operations, listing clusters, getting status, sizing up or down, and deleting when you're done. Just one comment on the resize part. If you need to scale down, or say you're using low priority instances, we allow you to specify what you do with existing jobs. Simply terminate them and stop. Stop and re-queue, or wait until the running jobs are done. Once I have the cluster up, I add a job. I've been working with the data science team to think about what's the right taxonomy of describing projects, jobs, experiments. I may be working with a model and running hundreds of experiments. How do I describe what I'm trying to do, and think about kind of trees or forks? I may go and try a bunch of different approaches, a bunch of different experiments. How do we start to converge on at least a naming convention, and then a way that different that the tools can be aware of what I'm trying to do, and start to help you understand this massive data that I've been creating. You specify the cluster that you want to run on, the number of VMs for the job. You can also specify the container on the job if you have custom code for that experiment or run. I can do it on the cluster side or the job side. Again, specifying, as I showed in the script, the tool type that I'm running and any specific configuration for that tool, and then what's the path to the training data, the output logs, debug logs. I may be starting with a previous model. What's the checkpoint of that, so I can go and start this job partway through and continue experimentation down. Just an example of what we're looking at in terms of schema for jobs. If you think about CNTK, again, the key thing is to tell the runtime I'm running a brain script model or a Python model. In the case of TensorFlow, what's the configuration for the three types of roles that I can have? The master, the worker, or the parameter server. What type of VM do I want them running on? And any configuration that needs to be passed through to the TensorFlow. Then, how do I manage jobs, list jobs, get a status, cancel, or delete? Then some of the metadata operations. How can I log in to the machines, see the models, export the models? How can I access logs that are on the machine, on the shared storage, or stream it out to my app? As I said, we're just part of this broader workflow. While the training and the infrastructure is a necessary part, if we're doing our jobs well, it's kind of hidden from the users and everything works. And that there's another set of tools that they're using to prepare the data, to describe the model, to orchestrate that experimentation. And on the other side, I can go and deploy a trained model, use it in an application as a REST API, go and do bulk or batch scoring, perhaps with batch, or take that same model and deploy it in a SQL Server and a data lake. So I just want to show you one more quick demo of some work that we've been doing internally and some tools that we're starting to use for internal teams to make part of this workflow easier. So what you see here is Visual Studio, where I have Visual Studio tools for Python installed. So if I'm developing a CNTK or TensorFlow model in Python, I've got the ability for IntelliSense. I can set breakpoints. I can step through and debug my code. Very important to make sure that my models are working first on my local machine before I go and run at scale. Once I'm ready to run at scale, we've got a team working on what's tentatively being called Visual Studio Tools for AI. Think of it as a cluster front end for running jobs. Here I have, you can see the batch AI training service showing up. I have a cluster that we created earlier that's got 40 NC6 GPUs. With this tool, I can go and submit a job. Let me just import a job I created earlier. Here you can see, let's see if we can zoom this. Some of the parameters I was describing, what cluster do I want to run on, what script am I going to use, the name, the number of VMs that I want to use, variety of frameworks that we support, location of the containers, and then the paths to the input and output directories. And then down here, one of my favorite features, if I'm running an experiment, I want to do in the HPC world what we would call a parametric sweep, in this case a hyperparameter sweep of I want to go and test, in this case I want to run 10 different jobs with different values for the mini batch size and whether I'm running in a data parallel or not. I didn't have to write a lot of code to do this. All I can simply do is specify, you know, the job ID, the parameters that I want to pass in. Under the covers, this tool will go and submit, in this case, 10 jobs across 40 GPUs to the cluster. Let's submit the job and see what it looks like. So they've got the ability to show a heat map, which was not refreshing earlier. So let me just sort of go to the Azure portal and see the jobs already started and running on these 40 GPUs. I've got the ability to look at the jobs running on the cluster. You can see I've got those 10 jobs started. Now we're starting to do work with the Azure ML team to, you know, how do I manage of versions of experiments, or what can I do with exported or with models when they're done and bring them into production. So we're starting to do for some internal teams is the ability directly from the tool to publish a model to Azure ML where they can go and deploy it on a batch a cluster for batch evaluation, or package it up as a container and deploy it as a REST API using Azure container services. So starting to show how you can automate the workflow of training, of testing, and then deploying the model out to an application. Oops. So I hope I've given you a taste of some of the investments that we're making to, you know, bring this powerful GPU infrastructure to help people build a custom AI. We're doing a limited a preview of this of the service now, so we can work very closely with customers and their data science teams. If you're interested, I invite you to go to this URL, read a little bit more about the service, and join our preview.
Cool. Thank you, Alex. So hopefully that gave you a little bit of good idea of, you know, the new infrastructure and how you can sort of really utilize it. I wanted to spend, you know, just a quick few minutes on some of the interesting, use cases that will get essentially presented out of this, right? So AI, you know, is really, really everywhere. Whenever you talk to your phone, whether it's Cortana, Siri, whatever digital assistant that you're talking to, that's all AI inferencing. Additionally, you know, when you go to websites, things like Pinterest, that is all image recognition and models that have been trained on these GPUs as well. And then things like recommendation engines where, like retail, if you're purchasing certain things, that retailer will know exactly what to sort of recommend to you at a later stage. Now, these are models being trained on behavior that you're doing on these things. It's certainly in different industries as well, from a perspective of it really is touching people's lives. Now Skype Translator obviously is one example where somebody could speak, a different language to another person across the world and be able to directly communicate with them. These are all models, language-based models that are built on all of the data using AI. This is a pretty interesting one. This is a hospital in LA that's actually using 10 years worth of data to actually predict what are the symptoms of certain diseases for kids and babies, which is really, really cool, right? They've got this mammoth amount of data. They just don't know what to do with it. Now they're actually training models to recognize what are the symptoms moving in the future. The third one's actually one that you might have already seen, and so there's actually a video on it on YouTube. This is a person that works for Microsoft, is blind, and what he's got here is essentially a camera on his glasses that's taking photos of what's in front of him. Those photos are now then being uploaded into Blob storage. They're now then being run through a model, and then inference is running on top of them to recognize what's in front of him, and then it's then being sent back down into a microphone, into a little speaker, in his ear. And so now what that means is he can actually completely change how he lives, meaning he can actually recognize people's faces. He can actually recognize what kind of emotion they've got on their faces. He can read menus. He can sort of navigate himself. So that's really sort of changing how he interacts with the world. It's fueling all industries. Every industry is using AI and deep learning. So all the way from airports, where essentially if you've lost your kid, for example, you can go to the security center, and then you can actually use image recognition to figure out where your kid was last seen. The second one's actually quite interesting. If you've actually gone to, this is actually a project by Hilton, but if you've actually gone to, the Building 99 Microsoft, there's actually a little robot there called Connie, where it's actually able to recognize you and then tell you where your next meeting is. In this case, this is a hotel concierge, which means that it's able to actually tell you where the greatest sushi place is, and then it's actually able to even then book a table for you. The third one's really interesting. It's called the Lettuce Project. It's online. You can check it out. What it actually does is there's cameras in the front of it, and what it's recognizing is it's actually recognizing if it's a weed or if it's actually the lettuce itself. And if it's a weed, it's spraying just enough pesticide or herbicide to kill the weed. And so this is really changing how they work. So. And then a couple of other customers that we're working with specifically on our VMs right now, Noonim is changing sort of the financial analysis market by using AI for their workloads on these GPUs. They're actually using lots of data from folks like Bloomberg and Reuters, and then they're taking all of that data, putting it into a model using the training that's happening on these GPUs, and then offering that to second-tier banks and financial institutions that couldn't afford that data in the first place. So they're actually adding value by using AI and then actually providing analytics to them. Algorithmia is another one. They actually pre-train the models on the GPUs, and then they actually offer a service for developers, which is thousands and thousands of APIs that are inferencing APIs for computer vision, machine learning, image recognition, you name it, they have it. And essentially, they've sort of made a business out of training models and then providing value by providing those as APIs for inferencing as well. Now, Alex talked a little bit about Cognitive Toolkit, previously known as CNTK. This is Microsoft's open source version of our deep learning toolkit. Now, most of these things that I kind of talked about were running CNTK underneath the covers, meaning that they're actually using Cognitive Toolkit to train their models and then actually even do the scoring as well. Last year, CNTK, or Cognitive Toolkit, reached a milestone, which is human parity on speech, which is pretty incredible, in this day and age, and it's only going to get better from now on as well. And then last supercomputing, Jensen, who's the CEO of NVIDIA, announced the fact that, the Cognitive Toolkit is, the fastest on Azure and additionally fastest on Pascal. And at the time, we didn't really have Pascal. Now, we obviously announced the P100s, but we also wanted to, cater for the deep learning, AI, machine learning markets as well. So earlier this week, we announced an additional VM size for deep learning specific training purposes, and that's the P40, that's the ND-based instances for deep learning. And these are going to be powered by the Tesla P40, which is primarily for single precision-based workloads. So today, for example, CNTK and some of the other frameworks like TensorFlow and so on and so forth are using what's called FP32, so single precision floating point underneath the covers. And so the reason why we're obviously picking P40 is because of the fact that it offers really good performance on single precision. And once the market and once the frameworks start to move to half precision. Later in the year, we obviously have the P100s that you can utilize for half precision as well. So we're giving you really, really good performance there. Additionally, with the model sizes and the data sizes growing really, really large, memory sizes are becoming quite important as well. So one of the other major differences here is that the P40 itself has a 24 gig memory size on top of it, which means you can fit bigger memory sizes, and then with the high bandwidth of the GPU itself, you can push through a lot of data in here and do really large scale training. So again, as with the P100 SKU, you're going to be able to get one up till four. And then, as Alex talked about some of the distributed training workloads, you're really going to be able to utilize the InfiniBand infrastructure in this case. So again, we now have the first one, which is the NCV2, the second generation of traditional compute for CUDA, OpenCL type workloads in the P100 generation, and then now the P40 as well. So we did do some benchmarks on Cognitive Toolkit and Cafe. We picked two frameworks there, and then we saw almost 2x performance in single precision training on some of the different networks. We're obviously seeing quite a bit more performance in some of the things like ResNet and AlexNet as well. So we really think that the P40 is going to allow for all of that. Now, apart from the training capabilities on the P40, what's also going to be really cool is the inferencing side of it. Now, it does have Int 8 capability, the P40, so what that means is you're going to be able to run inferencing right on the same chip as well. So you have a single VM with a single P40 or multiple P40s, you're going to be able to run training and then inference right on top of it right after that, which is pretty fantastic. So we're seeing a massive speed up of training performance, inference performance from the previous generation K80 now to the P40 because of the specific performance capabilities on the P40. Obviously, this is a showcase in K80 versus P40. In this case, the K80 is obviously that half card. So this is really going to enable some of the large-scale services to build on top. I talked about Algorithmia earlier on. This is the kind of hardware that they're going to be running on top of to deploy massive-scale inferencing services. Now, obviously, everything is an inferencing device, right? Your phone is an inferencing device, for example, where you're talking to an AI. But in the case of really running a large-scale multi-tenant system, you're going to be able to use a P40 GPUs both for training and inference as well. So as Alex mentioned, the AI service is in preview. The P40s and the P100s are going to be previewed later in the year during summer timeframe. We're going to be announcing a little bit more details in the coming weeks. There's actually a website as well that you can go and if you look at the blog post from earlier on Monday, there is a link there for you to go sign up for the preview so that we can invite you and run some testing, run some benchmarks, and then we'd love to hear feedback, on these things as well. So I think we've left about 3 to 5 minutes for some questions. Please feel free to ask anything. Alex and me are available for questions.
Hello?
Yes, please.
Hello? Yeah. Hi. I saw your benchmark of the P40 and the K80 on the CNTK and the Cafe. It's amazing performance. Did you do any benchmark on the TensorFlow on your platform?
We have not. I know our internal guys are, in fact, as I mentioned, right, like as actually Alex mentioned, that we're going to support every framework. It's not that one framework's better than the other. Even our internal teams are actually using TensorFlow internally as well. So although we haven't showed any framework benchmarks for TensorFlow, we can certainly publish those as well. But we're seeing some great performance numbers throughout the throughout the stack.
Okay. Yep. How about comparing with your Azure HPC capacity with the TPU capacity?
Yep. So as I mentioned, right, like earlier in the talk, that capacity is definitely a challenge because of the high demand. But as you saw my map, we're going to be expanding pretty aggressively throughout the sort of our global 38 regions to make sure that we have capacity everywhere.
Sorry, my question is compared with the Google TPU.
TPU. Right. Yeah. So I mean, TPU is an inferencing chip, right? So it is very tightly coupled to some of their workloads internally. Now, TPU, as far as I know, I haven't read into it, but as far as I know, it's not available as a customer programmable piece of hardware. Right? What we're offering here is an infrastructure, so you're actually having physical devices in your hand, whereas that they're actually offering, you know, services on top of the TPU, so to speak. So there's a major difference in how you access that technology. So you can't directly access a TPU today, but I don't know, maybe it'll...
Analog there is what we're doing with FPGA is to power both Bing and the cognitive services. We're using these specialized things first to get greater scale and performance for our internal services and looking at how we provide that available for custom code too.
Sorry.
I'm hoping no question is a stupid question today, because the presentation kind of made me feel like I'm more at the halfway between 100 and 200 level with this topic. Sessions have been transcribing what you say almost in real time. Does that come from the cognitive services research?
This is actually a person doing it.
Okay.
But what you saw on Tuesday in Harry Shum's keynote was live and real, being done through AI trained in Azure.
How close are you to the person, given the speech recognition parity?
Pretty close.
I mean, check out Chris.ai. It's one of the new services that is sort of getting to that sort of, you know, that delta is being reduced more and more.
Course.ai? What did you say?
Chris, C-R-I-S.
C-R-I-S.
AI.
Yeah. And what's interesting about Chris is it actually, it came first to how do I transcribe academic talks, and it takes someone's paper and PowerPoint, trains on that. You can do like 15 minutes of training and dramatically increase the accuracy of sort of jargon and language. And it kind of shows what a generic speech recognition model can do than what a little bit of customization can do.
Thank you.
Hey, I saw your K80 versus P100 graph. And I noticed most of the values went up by 10 to 40%. But I also noticed that you were comparing two K80s to four P100 graphics cards.
That's correct. So those two K80s are the two full boards.
So it's really four GPUs against
four
GPUs.
So it's actually the same number of physical graphics
cards. Yes, correct. I should have pointed that out. But it is two full physical boards.
Yeah,
so two K80s, yeah.
When I thought about it, I was like, are you getting double the compute for the same price? Or
yes,
are the
correct.
New ones actually sometimes
rightly,
slower?
Yeah, rightly pointed out. So yeah, on the bottom there, we were saying that, it's two full physical boards. So it's four GPUs versus four P40s. So that would be essentially the NC24, which is four GPUs exposed, the full server box, versus the ND24.
Okay, so it's two complete two GPU graphics cards on each case.
Yes.
So it is a one-to-one comparison. Yep.
It is a one-to-one comparison. Correct.
Four to four.
Yep, correct. Four to four. Yeah, that's right.
Hi. You mentioned that the speech recognition error rate has exceeded human. What does that even mean?
What it means is like in literal terms, essentially that the models are getting so complex and so smart that they're able to essentially rival a human actually hearing the talk and transcribing it themselves. So the error rate is getting smaller and smaller.
So what you would be seeing here would be exactly as if a human were transcribing.
That's right. So what I mentioned there, right, in the article there was 5.7% delta. So basically with 5.7% of error rate, you'll be able to get, essentially as a transcribing.
And that 5.7% is a human error, meaning that if a person were
5.7 error within human, right.
Within human
comparison.
Human.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I had one more question. This is unrelated to my previous one. When I'm developing a parallel GPU-based program, I probably want to be able to run on small data sets cheaply, but have access to the physical GPUs with the same development environment and runtime requirements of the full load, just to see if I actually process the data correctly. But I really don't care, and I want like cheap GPU, but works the same.
Low priority.
So there's what you want to do is work on the same GPU and the same environment. Start with small data first, so I can get fast iteration, see how my model is working. If you want to run a lot of experiments in parallel, that's where the low priority OVMs come into play.
Is it also possible to develop for this platform on my home desktop where I have a much lesser GPU?
Yes. Yeah. And so typically people will start on their desktop or laptop first. You can start with, say, a Titan X GPU and then run the same environment at scale in Azure. And that's where containers are very nice, is you can be sure that the libraries and the environment are the same. Go and ship that to Azure and then just run.
And the containers are running on my local machine would be also how I test the setup scripts that can automatically convert your image into what I want to run.
Yep.